Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the historic vote on the EU withdrawal bill in the British House of Commons. I hope you find our discussion interesting. Thank you very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. He joins us this afternoon. This portion of the program, of course, is being pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule, but I'm looking forward to the upcoming conversation. We're going to get a very involved and in-depth story about what's happening in the United Kingdom related to Brexit and how that may impact the rest of the world. So today's program is going to be very informative. I'm looking forward to this. And with that as the introduction to the program, Tom, good evening to you. Thanks for taking the time to be with us as always.
Thank you for asking me, Lockwood.
Always a pleasure. And of course, the other issue here associated with this is what's the weather like there in London? Because we're expecting a significant cold snap. And I've been seeing stories about the weather in the European community, heavy snowfalls, things of that nature. What's it like in the United Kingdom, in London, for example?
In Austria, they have people dying in avalanches, but we have had no snow here. It's turned significantly colder today and a bit windy. I was out cycling and I did feel it. It's been a very, very mild winter, not even much rain.
Wow. Now, you're supposed to have a cold snap next week, I understand.
Yes, I think it'd be nice. You know, there's a problem. If you don't get a cold snap, then the insects that lie in the trees and everything don't die. And so the gardeners, like myself, have a tough time in the spring.
Okay, so you're looking for a cold weather snap to really change the environment for a period of time, thereby reducing the amount of pests. With that said, and a quick question for you, the temperature being as mild as it has that had any influence or impact on the political activities there in London?
No, I don't think so. I think people, they had a big rally, several thousand people outside Parliament Square or outside Parliament last night to try and urge people to vote against Mrs. May's proposal. And I think the same number would have turned up whether it was freezing or not.
Okay. Well, I was observing that rally on Sky News last night, and I was looking for you. Were you in attendance at that rally?
You know, I thought about it, and I decided I was thinking of it from the point of view of tonight's program. I thought I'd probably do better staying home and watching the live reporting on television.
What is the value of these rallies? Do they really influence Parliament? You've got two chambers of Parliament, so we'll get into that here in a moment. But do those rallies have any influence?
Well, I think they do. I think if the politicians know that there's thousands of people standing outside their window, then I think they have to take note of it. Yes.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. We're going to get back to the issue of Parliament and the activities there in London and the United Kingdom. But let's first go to the events here in the States. And I'm wondering if any of the recent news items in the United States have made the front page of the European press, particularly the British press. If so, what has been the top story there? Because I think Brexit's pretty much consuming the oxygen in the room. But anything in the States of note there in the European
press? You're right. Brexit is consuming the oxygen, not only here in the UK, but across Europe. And so, you know, there's a heavy focus on Brexit at the moment. They're covering things. It's on the inside pages. We still have foreign news. You know, there is the rest of the world to consider every now and then. There's several things. One is policy towards Turkey / Syria. And the other big story is Trump, the Russian agent. There's been very little about his Supreme Court nominee, not Supreme Court, his Attorney General nominee,
William Barr.
And not too much about the various people throwing their hats into the Democratic ring for the presidency.
So that Russian connection still has a lot of resonance there in the European community.
Yes, it still has a lot of resonance. I think, you know, the one thing which concerns people about that, where they think there might be a sliver of evidential proof is that President Trump asked the translator not to take notes and to keep completely silent about what was discussed. And that is simply unheard of. I mean, you know, any other foreign leader, of course, we know that extensive notes are taken and records are kept. And it does raise the question, you know, why Putin? Why wouldn't he take notes for Putin? I mean, especially with Vladimir Putin.
We would remiss not to point out that a lot of the countries there in the European community, Germany being one of them, have close ties with the Russian government.
That has nothing to do with whether or not Trump's a Russian agent.
And Russian, oh, well, okay. So they're continuing this, I would argue, canard on the issue of Russia connection. Let's talk about one other issue that's significant here in the States, I think would be of equal weight to Brexit, and that would be the shutdown. As much coverage about that, by the by.
There was towards the end of last week, but again, Brexit has taken over. I noticed today one of the lead stories on the BBC was Nancy Pelosi saying that Trump should give his State of the Union address in writing mm-hmm. because of the government shutdown. They cannot guarantee his security if he came to Congress. I think that's playing politics myself, but...
No, really? Okay, but continue on. But you know, it is interesting because the original States of the Union were delivered in writing.
Right up to Woodrow Wilson.
Exactly. So
Washington, it started with Jefferson. Washington and Adams did appear before Congress. But from Jefferson onwards until 1913, the addresses were delivered in writing.
Right. I think to a large degree that would be beneficial. I think the members of Congress would be disappointed because they don't get the TV time that they are allowed during the State of the Union address when they either applaud or fail to applaud or when they cross their arms and humph in public. So I find it interesting that Ms. Pelosi is suggesting no TV coverage for the State of the Union address. But then again, as much coverage about the continuing, well, I'll use the word rebellion within the Democrat Party over the leadership. Has there been any coverage of that by any chance?
No. No, I haven't seen anything on that.
Well, you will be interested in knowing that, in fact, as recently as yesterday, the Speaker of the House kind of passed down some punishment to some young Democrats who had politicked for a different speaker. And she has basically shut them out of committee assignments. And it's being noted here in the press in the United States about the, if you will, the retribution being met out by the Speaker of the House. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. As I mentioned the opening of the program, this portion has been pre-recorded to give Tom some opportunity to, we'll gather information because we're going to be chatting about Brexit here in a few minutes. Before we take the break, I do want to remind you, you can always go to the website, LookAheadNews.com, as well as his radio program, Look Ahead Radio, as well heard around stations around the country. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate the sleeping schedule for our guest, Tom Arms. He living in London, some 5 hours ahead of us, and so nearly 11:15 his time in London. Tom, continuing on with some news related to the United States, and you actually alluded to this a few moments ago in the first segment, and that, of course, related to Turkey and the questions associated with the president's announcement of a quick withdrawal from Syria. And I know that the Secretary of State, Secretary Pompeo, was in Syria recently, in Turkey recently, to chat about that possible transition. What is the coverage of that in the, again, European press?
Well, the latest coverage is focused on the so-called safe or secure zone, which would be 20 miles wide, it proposed to be 20 miles wide along the border between Turkey and Syria. That is, Syria would be expected to give up 20 miles of its northern border. There seem to be lots of different interpretations of what a safe or security zone involves. Will it be inhabited by Turkish troops? Will it be inhabited by Kurdish militia?
Mm-hmm.
Will it have American troops in it to keep the Turks and the Kurds apart? If it's going to have Turkish troops in it, it will effectively become part of Turkey.
Right.
In which case, has Syria been consulted about this because it's their land? If it's going to be held by Kurdish militia, once again, has Syria been consulted? If American troops are going to be there, has Syria been consulted about this? Or will they be UN troops? Or is it simply going to be completely open, in which case it would be a smuggler's paradise? All this was pointed out in the Times editorial this morning, who accused President Trump, the Trump administration, of sending the most incredibly mixed up signals to allies and everyone else that he could possibly send.
We're going to get to mixed signals here in a moment. Real quick observation on this. I don't know that anyone consulted with Syria when the United States and, for that matter, Turkey stepped
in.
Well,
with the Russians then.
And the Russians.
I mean, Russians are really the government now in Syria.
Right. Yeah. It defies the explanation about what's going on.
It defies reason.
The whole region does. So in reality, the president's decision, I have to commend him. He's forced the various participants to come to some serious decisions. Otherwise, it was really status quo of chaos. Maybe there'll be more chaos as a result, but I would disagree quickly and say the president, by his rather abrupt announcement, force people to make some decisions. Speaking of decisions, let's talk about this in relation to the United Kingdom and Brexit. It's fascinating. The whole events taking place this past week, the Parliament has decided that the deal presented by Prime Minister Theresa May, something that you had predicted, would not be acceptable. But then the question is, what is acceptable?
Nobody knows what's acceptable. The problem is that there is no majority in the House of Commons for any plan that's on the table or being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what they call the Norway option, the Canada Plus option, the Mrs. May's deal, no deal, or a second referendum. Those are the various things that have all, if they're not officially on the table, they're floating around. And there's no majority for anything. And so the House of Commons is completely divided and up the excremental creek without a paddle.
All right. Whoa. Okay, Tom, let's talk here for a moment. I want to go to an explanation, if you will, of the role of the House of Lords versus the House of Commons. Who's running the country?
Okay, it's the House of Commons runs the country.
Okay.
I should say the government runs the country, and they are selected they're chosen by the party which has the majority in the House of Commons. The House of Lords only has the power to delay legislation.
Okay.
So if it doesn't like something, it can make suggested amendments and send it back to the House of Commons. And the House of Commons can say, yeah, that's not a bad idea, or, you know, up yours, House of Lords, and throw it out. But that's all the House of Lords can do.
Okay, now, what role is the House of Lords playing in this issue of Brexit? Any role at all?
At the moment, none. But they have to. It will go before the House of Lords at some stage for final approval. And as I said, if they do not approve it, it will just come back to the Commons and the Commons can overrule the House of Lords. It's a matter of a few weeks.
What is the interest on the part of the House of Lords related to Brexit? We hear constantly
they're overwhelmingly opposed to Brexit.
They want to stay in the European Union. Okay.
Yes.
By the way, for those who are maybe joining us for the first time ever, Brexit being the British exit from the European Union, which has been underway now for, is this going on 3 years of debate?
2016, June 2016.
Okay, so
June 23rd.
Almost 2.5 years. March 29th, you have to make it. You basically, the curtain comes down or goes up, whichever direction you want to call it.
What happens is, if no deal is agreed with the European Union or with the European Commission, then we leave the European Union without a deal, without any deal over trade,
right,
security, policing, aircraft controls, a whole range of issues.
Okay, now let me interrupt you here real quickly. I think this is important clarity here for you to share with us, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio, and we're learning about Brexit. The many countries have trade deals. They have arrangements. I'm talking outside of the European Union. For example, the United States or China or Japan or Syria, if they have trade deals, all have trade deals with either other nations or with the European Union. So in the case of a no-deal exit, then there are no trade relations, there are no structures that will be put in place. Am I correct on that description?
That's absolutely right. They would have to all be negotiated. And what you have to remember that at the moment, all of Britain's foreign trade deals are via the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that it will not only have trade agreements, not only not have trade agreements with the European Union, but it will not have trade agreements with 59 other countries.
It strikes me that the European Union should be concerned here as well, because there are ongoing activities that are months or years in the planning and or in the midst of conclusion. In other words, long-term contracts, things of this nature. And I would think that many of the countries within the European Union would be a little concerned and not want this instantaneous, abrupt break.
They don't. They don't want it. But on the other hand, they have to have the agreement of all 27 member countries. That is, 27 without the United Kingdom. And this is what those 27 member countries have come up with. Mrs. May's deal, or the May EU deal, which is acceptable to them. In particular, Ireland, which would be very, very affected by the fact that Britain is leaving the EU, especially in relation to Northern Ireland, where, of course, there has been a long history of violent struggle. And they're concerned that the closing of the border, which would be the normal thing to do, would lead to a renewal of violence in Northern Ireland, which would spill over into Ireland and into the United Kingdom.
All right. We're talking with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. We're going to take a quick break, come back, sort of wrap things up with the issue of Brexit, and then we're going to mosey across the channel to France, figuratively speaking, of course, to talk about the yellow vests. That's an interesting issue as well, and I'm wondering if it plays a role in the debate related to the European Union and the inventions, the potential intervention of Brexit. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms. British Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal is dead. It's just not buried. The Prime Minister hopes to raise it Lazarus-like and present herself as a political messiah. But her deal has been shot, knifed, strangled, knocked over the head with a candlestick and thrown into a ditch. To put the chances of a political miracle into perspective, let's look at the next worst defeat in modern British political history. The current British government lost by 230 votes. The next nearest defeat was in 1924. Ramsay MacDonald's Labour government had dropped the prosecution against John Ross Campbell, editor of the communist newspaper The Workers' Weekly, after he published an article calling on the British armed forces to mutiny in support of a socialist revolution. In that case, the majority against the government was a mere 160. Theresa May likes to portray herself as a strong and stable person with a Churchillian touch of the British bulldog. A better description would be bullheaded. Parliament has given the Prime Minister until Monday to perform her miracle and come up with a Plan B. She's responded by calling for a meeting of all party leaders that will dispense with red lines and reach a compromise, breathe new life into the EU withdrawal bill, and win over 230 dissenting members of Parliament. If this miracle were to happen, the result would be a horribly stitched Frankenstein monster. The biggest problem is not so much the terms of the agreement as the bitter divide between the ruling Conservatives and the opposition Labour Party of Jeremy Corbyn. The Conservative government is being driven by its far right wing, and Corbyn is so far on the left of the political spectrum that he's in danger of dropping off. His policies are so extreme that the Conservatives are 5 points ahead in the opinion polls despite the total Brexit disaster. Corbyn's only hope of winning power and creating a British workers' paradise is to allow Theresa May to create a chaotic vacuum into which he can step. That is why, in spite of losing the vote on the EU withdrawal bill by 230 votes, the Conservative Party and Northern Ireland's Democratic Unionists united against Corbyn's motion of no confidence in the government. They hate the Brexit deal. They are frightened of the Brexit deal. They are frightened and hate the prospect of a Corbyn government even more. Even if Labour and the Conservatives can surmount their ideological differences for the common good, there are other parliamentary differences which need to be overcome. The 2016 referendum was called to resolve the Remain-Leave split within the Conservative Party. It has only turned the crack into a yawning fissure. Not so well known is a similar division within the Labour ranks. It would become painfully apparent should Corbyn succeed in orchestrating and winning a general election. Theresa May is totally opposed to a second referendum. She argues that membership of the EU is not the only issue at stake. The wider and more important issue of British democracy is also threatened. British voters were asked what they wanted, in or out. They voted out. It is the duty of the political class to respect the majority decision of the electorate and implement it. The problem is that the Prime Minister's position ignores the political reality that she has failed to successfully implement the electorate's wishes. The deal that she has negotiated is unacceptable to Parliament, who are successfully mirroring divisions within the wider British public. The chaos of no deal is not on the table, or at least unacceptable. The only credible alternative is to put the question back to the people in a referendum and to bury Theresa May's EU withdrawal bill.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England, some 5 hours ahead of the airing of this program, so we have pre-recorded this. Tom, continuing on the conversation with Brexit and the fact that the Parliament has basically said they have no interest in the proposal presented by the Prime Minister Theresa May, the proposal mounted to a vote of confidence, if you will, in the Prime Minister. And so I've been seeing stories about this was an overwhelming defeat of the Prime Minister. And then last evening, I watched Sky News as Jeremy Corbyn, I guess the leader of the Labour Party, is that correct?
Yes.
Labour Party announced that he was going to table, which is an interesting description. Parliamentary terms, I looked it up earlier this morning, tabling a motion means to put on the table for consideration. Under the Roberts Rules of Orders, just to confuse everyone, when you table a motion, you basically are setting it aside under Roberts Rules of Order. But under the parliamentary procedure, the leader, Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, announced he was putting on the table a vote of no confidence. And I was reading earlier this morning that many leaders in many organizations of the United Kingdom had decided there was no way they were going to support a motion of no confidence because they don't like Jeremy Corbyn, which means that then the prime minister would remain as prime minister. And then that begs the question, what next? First question for you, what's the problem with Jeremy Corbyn that he apparently...
He is so far off to the left that he falls off the political spectrum. He wants to withdraw from NATO. He wants to have better relations with China and Russia. He wants to, he hates Donald Trump. He wants to withdraw from the EU. He wants to get rid of Britain's nuclear deterrent. A whole list of things. He wants to start controls on the movement of capital, raise taxes, renationalize a whole host of industries and everything else. Opinion polls, despite the fact that Mrs. May is incredibly unpopular and has made a complete hash of Brexit, opinion polls still say that her Conservative Party is 5% ahead of Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party.
You've given me hope. And my hope is, and thankfully, that socialism has not fully taken control of the United Kingdom and the
European
Union.
I've been telling you this for ages.
Well,
your view of this, you know, you base everything on health service, you know, and really that's not very accurate. You know, basically people believe that everyone here should have the right to a healthy life.
Okay.
The only way you can do that is with a national health service.
Okay. Well,
and that's true in most countries except the United States.
No, well, we've disagreed on this many times before, but no, I'm announcing that this is a good thing. Let's talk here very quickly about what next with Brexit in light of the fact that there is no decision. And I was listening to a variety of sources last evening, the frustration over the absence of a deal. You know, this is, you've got 10 weeks, I think, before.
Yeah.
What
2 weeks. 2 weeks, or we go for a no deal. I think one likely, a lot of people are saying the most likely scenario is that they can apply for a delay.
Okay.
And that seems to be most likely, except that Mrs. May has said she won't apply for a delay. And of course, the EU would say, yeah, all right, you can have a delay, but why do you want a delay?
All right, so,
yeah. You have to have a reason. You know, a delay for no reason is just not good enough.
All right, I want to wrap things up here and go to France and Germany in relationship to the issue of Brexit as well. As we wrap it up with you on this topic right now, Tom, what's the mood, particularly in London, but in the United Kingdom, is there panic, or is there opinion of, other than frustration, that we are going to find a solution?
It's panic with frustration.
Okay. All right. We'll be following this next week as well. Brexit is, frankly, nothing else is happening in the world there in the United Kingdom. And I say that figuratively speaking because of Brexit. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's move across the pond, other direction. We'll go west. Let's go across the channel, that is, to France.
But by the way, you know the French don't call it the channel.
What do they call it?
La Manche, the sleeve.
The sleeve. All
they
right.
They refuse to call it the English channel.
All right. Well, let's talk about this in relationship to France. The yellow vests. This is it's almost another French Revolution.
Yeah, and I think what's happening is Emmanuel Macron is trying to defuse it.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's done is, starting yesterday, an online national debate where he has asked people to put down their complaints, send all his complaints and suggestions, and he will have people plow through them all, the okay. texts and the emails, and respond to them and basically come back with proposals.
Do you think that will fly? Does that, I mean, are the French that interested in, is this just a matter of frustration that they're expressing over the, and predominantly over a green initiative that was an increase in gas fuel prices, but there are other issues as well, and that is, of course, the economy.
No, he's basically saying that the subjects that he once covered are environment, democracy, public services, and taxes.
Okay. It's an interesting story. Has the Yellow Vest movement stabilized? Is it growing or is it getting smaller?
No, it's becoming smaller.
Okay.
I mean, it's all right. But you know, if nothing comes out of this great national debate, and you're right, it may just be an effort in window dressing. If nothing comes out of it, then I could certainly see them starting up again.
Okay.
It's interesting. The Yellow Vest people, basically, it's a question of taxes. They are really upset that he's cut the tax for the wealthy. He's cut what's called the wealth tax, which was introduced by his predecessor, François Hollande. But he's done nothing for them.
Okay.
And in fact, you know, he was raising taxes, indirect taxes, on petrol, which is something that people in the rural areas, which are the poorest areas of France, need more than anything else.
Right. I want to move on to other items very quickly. Does Brexit play a role in the disputes there in France?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't.
All right. Let's move next door, figuratively speaking, to Germany. You've got a note here. Growth slows, slowest for years. Again, is this a result of events, world politik, and the Brexit, or is it something to do with what's happening to the German economy?
I would think it has a lot to do. It has something to do with Brexit, because a lot of German trade is with the UK. And so people are having to spend money on setting up alternative systems and things like that. More to do with the slowdown in the Chinese economy, which has more to do with the tariffs, American tariffs, Trump's tariffs. So it's a sort of combination of things. Tariffs are definitely starting to have an impact on European economies, especially the big global economies like Germany.
Right.
And that's having an impact because the Chinese economy is slowing down. So the Chinese are buying less from Germany.
Okay. So the issue of tariffs has played a role in this as well. All right. One other quick item related to Germany and the slow growth. Of course, Chancellor Angela Merkel has announced she is going to be stepping down. There is an issue of leadership in Germany. And the other question, of course, has to do with the complaints by the growing populist movement there in Germany over immigration and asylum seekers and things of this nature. Is that playing a role in the disputes there in Germany?
Yeah, I think, you know, she's a lame duck. I don't see if she's going to step down, why she just doesn't step down.
Right.
And let her successor take over. They've selected a successor.
But
as for the Alternative for Deutschland, they're having their own problems at the moment. They are being investigated by the German security services for links to far right groups. Basically, some key members of the Alternative for Deutschland are also members of neo-Nazi groups.
Right. Okay.
Groups, I mean, one person, for instance, recently said, was quoted as saying, the Holocaust was no more than a bit of chicken mess on the wire.
Wow. All right. And by the way, that's playing a role here in the States as well in relationship to recent comments by political leaders in this country. And it's the impact that it's having on an organization, March for Women, even. And it has to do with, well, the anti-Semitic movement in this country. So that's a topic we need to discuss in the next few weeks. I want to touch on an item very quickly. We're going to a break, and we've got a lot to cover here. The Canadian drug dealer sentenced to death in China. We brought up China. And you've got a question, Mark. Is it political? Is it political in light of the fact that Canada has arrested the chief financial officer or one of the senior members of a major tech company in China under the auspices of spying and technological theft?
Yeah. Let me point out two things. One, that the courts are controlled by the government. The government is controlled by the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two is that when they decided to bring Holvis Mann back into court, they wrote to all the foreign correspondents and suggested they attend. Now, do you think it's political?
Hmm. Good question.
Of course it's political.
And but a man's life is at stake here. And, of course, it's a drug deal that we have no idea of the accuracy of it. All right. I want to touch on one other item. We're going to take a break here in a few moments. Belarus and Russia starting to fall out. We chatted about Russia at the opening of the program, and of course the concerns with Russia and the United States, but I brought up the issue of Russia and Germany. What about the situation in Belarus?
Well, Belarus is led by Alexander Lukashenko. He's been described as Europe's last Stalinist dictator. Now, he has very good relations with Vladimir Putin. And the Russians, for instance, have the right to transit their troops through Belarus, which is important for them, because Belarus borders the Ukraine, mm-hmm. Poland, and the Baltic states, all of which are, you know, now part of NATO. Well, Ukraine isn't, but it's sort of de facto. And so Lukashenko has always had good relations, but lately, the Russians have been making noises about having an actual union with Belarus, mm-hmm. taking it over. And Lukashenko is opposed to that. You know, and he's actually come out in opposition to the takeover of the Crimea.
You know,
and so they're starting to fall apart.
Uh-huh. And of course, we've got to go to a break. But you and I have a little historical perspective of this. The Union of Social Republics, Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR, and Belarus was one of them at one point.
It was.
And
it was.
Is there a quick question or answer from you on this one? Is this sort of an indication that President Putin would like to see a return of the USSR and the control by a senior government official, say a czar?
Yes.
Okay. And the rest
enough.
And Europe is beginning to see this.
Yes.
Oh, hallelujah.
Is the Trump administration? No.
Oh, I disagree. All right, we're going to take a quick break on that. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom and I were just chatting about an item that we're going to set aside for a later time. Fort Trump. We'll do that later time. I want to talk about two items here, Tom, as we wrap things up. And I always look forward to this last segment. But first, let's talk about the Kumbh Mela Festival in India. Wow.
There will be an estimated 150 million people at this Hindu festival.
That's half the population.
150 million people. It's the largest ever.
That is the half. Let me interrupt you and say 150 million, approximately half the population of the United States.
Yes.
Imagine
yes.
that.
They will be able to see the festival from space.
Wow.
They won't all come on one day. It's predicted that 30 million people will come on one day, probably the 4th of February. They gather on the banks of the River Ganges because it is a sacred river, and they believe that by bathing in the river, they can wash away their sins. And also, they come off the cycle of rebirth, which is a part of the Hindu religion.
150.
Absolutely massive. It started yesterday and it lasts to the middle of March, I think.
That is
4th of March.
I can't. That is going to be one messy river. I was going to say dirty river since everybody's washing in it.
But it has a political aspect too, because you know this is a Hindu festival and you have a Hindu government in power and they're up for election in a couple of months. They're not doing well in the opinion polls, and so they want to make a big hit with this festival.
You said it's a cleansing, but also of rebirth. Tell me, what's the cycle of rebirth?
Hindus believe that when you die, you're reborn as another creature. And you move up or down according to how you've lived your life.
Oh.
So, for instance, I would almost certainly move up to,
a slug.
Senator or something
no,
like
no,
that.
No,
whereas
no,
you might
no.
go down to cockroach.
We'll continue on this conversation. Obviously, Tom has a great sense of humor, but a bad perspective in life. All right, Tom, let's talk about the Chinese anger room. You may need it.
Or you. I think a lot of people could be using this. It's a new business which has sprung up in China. You pay $20, they give you a baseball bat, and they put you in a room full of old radios, television sets, and crockery, and you're allowed to go wild.
You know, I was thinking that bad investments on the part of the public was a relatively Western, predominantly U.S. concept. I mean, we had the Pet Rock, and we had Beanie Babies and the like. But obviously the Chinese, we've, if you will, exported bad thinking from the West to the East. $20 to do something they can do at home, or better yet, they can go out into the trash pile and do it. They're paying upwards to $20 for this.
Yeah, you've got a point there. You've got a point.
I'm thinking that we may have to, here at the talk station, create our own environment for our own anger room. As a matter of fact, I've got just the facility we can do that with. And what we will do is we'll have pictures of Tom Arms posted on the wall. You're listening to...
Business opportunity for you. I want 10%.
You, as always, appreciate the time of Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here. Tom, look forward to more explanation of Brexit next week.
Well, there'll probably be a completely different story to tell.
I'm looking forward to it. Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.